Hi, everybody. It's July 28th, 2021. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and we have a lovely show for you today, okay, with our good friends from the National Association of Gifted Children. Okay, Tarek Grantham is back. Both, I guess, are back, actually. Tarek is the professor of educational psychology at the University of Georgia. He's a board member of NAGC, okay, which is the Association for Gifted Children. And Dina Brulis is here. She's called in all the way from Arizona, okay, Paradise Valley Unified School District, okay, where she's director of gifted education. Again, Dina's been on before. And she's also gifted program coordinator at Arizona State University. It's going to be a nice show. We're going to talk about supporting equity for Black and Hispanic gifted students. All right, and we've had some of this conversation before. We're going to have some more of it right now because it's very, very important, especially as we begin this new school year. As I said, we're the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's all over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. ace-ed.org. And our brand new issue, our back-to-school issue of Equity and Access magazine, our official online journal, is over there right now. We just put it up yesterday. It's a terrific issue. So please go over. All our podcasts are archived over there, just like this one will be. And the brand new issue of the magazine plus all the archived issues are over there at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on my two guests, as always, ladies first. Hi, Dean. That's Larry here.
Hi. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you. It's nice for you to be here. I appreciate it. How's the weather? Is it monsoon season yet?
It is monsoon season, and there's a slight reprieve today. There's the sun shining, and we haven't seen that for a few days, so nice.
Isn't that good? Isn't that good? You get some rain a couple times a year. Is that good?
A couple times a year, that would pretty much sum it up, yep.
Good. Okay, that's about it, as a matter of fact. Okay, and how's life down there in Georgia, Tarek?
Georgia is great. We are enjoying some sunny weather today at the moment where I am. And so we're looking forward to, yes.
Where are you?
In Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, okay, and you haven't had sun in a couple of days, huh?
Yeah, well, we've been having showers and severe thunderstorms in between, but right now at this particular moment, we're just enjoying kind of a nice, hot, refreshing morning and a sunny day.
Good, and I think it's going to get hot down there. That heat wave, I think, is coming your way, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's coming. It's been here.
Yeah. It's coming. Watch out, it's coming. Yeah, get the air conditioner cranked up. Okay, good topic today, supporting equity for Black and Hispanic gifted students, and I'll just ask it right off the bat. I'll ask Tarek, you're the professor. Professor, tell us, what's the challenge out there? What's going on? Okay, how come they're so underrepresented? If in fact they are, which I believe they are, in gifted education?
Well, that's a good question, and there are a lot of reasons there. School-related reasons, policy-related reasons, curriculum-related reasons. Peer-related reasons, and so
policy. I'm interested in what you just said. Policy-related reasons. Why would that be? Why would you?
Yeah.
Wow.
So from a policy
That's
standpoint.
Serious.
Yeah. So oftentimes, access to gifted and advanced programs can be impacted by policy, where policies can be created and designed intentionally or unintentionally to exclude, and they can exclude certain students. So when there are certain policies that favor various types of assessments, whether it's a standardized assessment written in English that can exclude many or create barriers for some students whose language may not be English, there are policies that frame when students can be identified, and so the policy aspect of it is really important to understand. In terms of referrals, there are policies governing referrals, who can make referrals, when and how often. There are policies governing the scores that students have to achieve at a certain level, and sometimes those thresholds are too high given some of the cultural or some of the impediments that create barriers for students.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know, that what you just said a second ago makes sense, okay, that sometimes those barriers are too high considering the cultural challenges we might have. And also, I might add, the socioeconomic challenges any given student
mm-hmm.
might have. Okay, it's the same thing. Dina, are you finding this? I mean, you work in a wonderful school district, Paradise Valley United School District out in Arizona, and describe that and then carry that over from what Tarek said a moment ago. Dina Bruin, everybody.
Yeah, so he's totally on target for that, because we have policies written into our gifted state mandates, into our district scope and sequences and priorities and policies and how these are written, so, and many times are just complete barriers for certain students who might not have had certain opportunities coming to school. So, for example, sometimes we have policies that are written where they have to be smart, okay? These kids have to show that they have potential, high ability, but then they also, some of the policies are written in such a way that they also have to have certain high achievement levels in addition to being inherently just smart. So, they didn't have some of the opportunities that others, like,
yeah, Dina, I think we're missing like every other word. Can you hang up and call back in again?
Oh, sure, I am sorry.
Yeah, do that, because we're missing like every third word or therefore. So go ahead and I'll talk to Tarek. Just call right back in. It should clear it up. Okay, Tarek, are you there?
I am. Yes. And
yeah.
So district policy, state level policy. You know, there's some schools that have policies that encourage teachers to look at students and behaviors associated with giftedness, or associated with being smarter, associated with potential. But oftentimes, teachers can look at students from a deficit paradigm or from a deficit perspective, and they can miss various behaviors that really do speak to the giftedness. And sometimes those behaviors show up in ways that are more pronounced than what a test score will indicate. So a kid, you know, who may be speaking non-standard English may have a use of vocabulary and splitting verbs and have very vivid language. And
mm-hmm,
you see this
mm-hmm.
kind of – there's work now dealing with hip-hop and you know, even
yeah.
Black English. And so
yeah.
there are other ways in which, you know, language is communicated that demonstrates an intellect or a potential that may not be captured in an instrument or an assessment that uses standard English. And so
yeah.
if teachers mm-hmm. –
Yeah, I was going to say,
sorry,
so you bring up an interesting point there. And I'm thinking, I remember the old thing back when, Ebonics, remember that, Ebonics?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was.
I mean, Ebonics is my first language. Let me just be straight.
There you
Ebonics
go.
Is my first language, and
there
I learned
go.
How to speak standard English. And when I moved from the city to the
yep.
county,
yep.
Ebonics was okay in the city, which was predominantly Black, but in the county, which was
yeah.
predominantly white, it wasn't. And so when I became a teacher and I started to understand this, you know, the kids who spoke Ebonics and who really who weren't speaking standard English based upon, you know, how they were raised and just culturally.
Sure. Sure.
I had an appreciation for what they were communicating, how they communicated, and I didn't see them through a perspective that they were less intelligent or unworthy or, quote-unquote, wouldn't pass the test or are not good candidates. No, I saw gifts. I saw gifts and talents. And seeing beyond those language differences, I was able to make referrals for certain students to get and have access
exactly.
to the advanced program. Yeah, and so the deficit thinking about language is just really important.
Yeah, it
so
really
what he's
I,
saying,
Dean,
what
I know you're
saying,
back. Wait, go ahead. Wait, I just have to say that is such an important point, what Tarek just said. Okay, and I'm going to ask both of you this. I want to go to Dina, but I just have to ask this. Okay, if you're in Atlanta, you're a teacher, okay? It's more likely that an African-American teacher, if you're African-American speaking what I'll call African-American language, Ebonics, whatever you want to call it, okay, that teacher's more likely to see you're gifted than a white teacher might be because they're not familiar with the way you're saying things. Then they'll think, well, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's such an obvious thing.
That's exactly what I wanted to say.
Great minds think alike, Dina. That just proves great minds think alike.
Being Hispanic, you know, I can also see things in kids that other teachers aren't going to see. And this is part of our problem and underrepresentation is that there's not enough, well, I would say just brown and black teachers, you know, are going to recognize. So when we're talking about this lack of identification, it's partly cultural. It's like we see things in kids that other teachers, that others will not see. And through no fault of their own, they just don't have that background in how to recognize some of these characteristics, traits, you know, some of the cultural aspects that the kids grow up with in their families, in their homes, in their communities, like Tarek was saying, they're just not understood by many educators. And this is a big part of our issue with the lack of representation in our, you know, our gifted programs. But the tools that we use, like Tarek was saying, if a child is not fluent in English, if they don't have some of these cultural, you know, these same experiences that other smart kids, they're going to be excluded, not intentionally by any means. It's just by nature of the way that we identify and that we use and the procedures and the policies, like Tarek was saying. Policies are at a state level, but they're also at the district level, how the district says this is their criteria on which we are going to identify or not identify students. And so we have to look at that. We have to really dissect that and take it apart and say, what is preventing this from happening?
But, you know, I have to ask Adina, stay with it for a second, because you're in the school district, and we're just using Paradise Valley as an example, everybody. They're a nice school district, okay? But, you know, these are the days of culturally responsive education. These are the days of equity. These are the days of more diversity. And every school district really is wringing its hands over how to make all that happen better for everybody. You know, and do you foresee, Dina, and I'm, again, just your district or any other district, okay, do you see a change coming when they start to recognize this? Because all these things both of you are so well saying have been around for a long time, and it's become accepted. And as you guys were just saying, it's time to make the change. It's wrong, okay?
You know, Larry, I do think that we are at a time where it's a good time in education because there's so much attention to inequities in society and just in human nature, in everything that we do in our world. And so this is trickling down to the school systems. Now we're saying, okay, how can we fix this? What can we do better? What's wrong? And I really do think that we need a lot of anti-bias training, a lot of culture responsive, you know, teaching, understanding what this looks like. What does it look like to be, you know, in the school system? Because we're seeing it in society at large, and I think we're at a good time. I think it's a turning point. And you're right. It's been decades that
it's
we
enough.
Have been going using the same procedures and the same identification criteria, the same assessments, and it's not working. So I think we're at a turning point.
Well, I hope we are.
And I'm not
Tarek,
the most optimistic person.
Tarek, okay, you're a professor at a school of education, pretty good one, University of Georgia, okay? And, you know, we've got to turn out teachers that understand all this. All right, and no offense to anyone, but by their own admission, I might add, a lot of the education schools will say, but they are behind a little bit in what's needed in schools. All right, you can argue with that if you want, but most most everybody agrees with that. Okay, you're welcome to argue with me on that. So my point is, when, like Dina just said, we need teachers who are very, very aware of the need for cultural responsibility, for understanding that a gifted kid, if I may, can talk funny, or talk differently is a better way to put it, okay? But mm-hmm. he or she is still gifted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it might be funny to your ears, but it's not funny to theirs, all
right?
And just, right.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so talk to me just from your point of view as a professor of education, again, in your case, education psychology, how do we make a difference as we turn out teachers? And as you can,
well,
by the way, if you can answer that, I'll give you another doctorate from the University of Larry. Okay, because that's an impossible question, but you know what I mean. Where do you start?
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's a silver bullet or there's just one right answer. But I think what needs to happen is with teacher education and educator preparation programs, especially at the undergraduate level, there needs to be a greater emphasis of understanding students with gifts and talents in general. And so these programs are often bombarded with state policies and, you know, and guidelines in order to help them integrate into the field. And there's so many courses, et cetera. And gifted and talented training in this area gets kind of a backseat. So if it does show up, it might show up as a chapter or it may show up as one session. So in many teacher education programs, there isn't enough information around students with gifts and talents. And then on top of that, there's a need to have an emphasis or a focus on perhaps some historical barriers that have been a part of gifted and talented education. Now, many of the programs I know at Georgia are doing a good job of introducing new concepts of culturally responsive teaching, anti-racist teaching, teaching that would address needs of different and diverse and students in an equitable way. However, mm-hmm. the part that is missing oftentimes is an emphasis on being able to identify strengths and needs in a way that allows for this underrepresentation and underachievement to be adequately addressed once in the schools.
So inherent racism? Is there inherent racism involved? Tarek, I'll ask you, then I'll ask Dina.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean,
I think that,
you know, it's...
As a field, yeah. As a field, we have embraced a reality that systemic racism in our country exists. I mean, it was no short and small response to what happened last year with George Floyd and also the awakening and the reality that encouraged a lot of educators, professional associations, even ACE Ed and perhaps others to really say, you know what, we really have a systemic issue. And how does it trickle down to training programs? How does it trickle down to schools? Where does it show up? And so there's this work that the field, leaders in the field of gifted education have been doing to own this issue and this problem within our own field, because gifted education and underrepresentation oftentimes can leave an impression that everyone in the field is supporting racist, elitist programming. And that's not true. You know,
yeah.
It's taken me a while to get here to be able to affirm that,
you
know, when you see these numbers and these discrepancies. But the reality of it is, because systemic racism is pervasive, we see how things can just play out. And so what happens is many individuals can see issues, but they may not feel empowered or have the knowledge or skill to know how to address it. And so I talk about this idea of bystanders. And so, you know, some people are bystanders to inequity, and they see a problem, but they feel powerless to do anything about it. And so they just bystand and watch a problem, and that's not acceptable. So the field has recently come out with a championing equity and supporting social justice statement that says we no longer are going to sit back and pretend that systemic racism isn't real, but we are going to address it, we're going to confront it, and we're going to continue to expand the equity work such that systemic racism, anti-bias training, anti-racism is now at the forefront so that we can eradicate it, so that the gifts and talents of students who are from underrepresented groups and students in general can benefit from this pervasiveness that can exist in programs that are predominantly white and upper and middle class, et cetera.
Agreed. Okay, and it's a long road. Okay, it really and truly is. I have a question. I don't know who can answer this. Dina, help me out here. Describe Paradise Valley Schools demographically. Okay, the reason I'm going to ask, what's the percentage of gifted kids in the school district? Just using yours as an example. And what's the percentage of white versus black or Latino gifted kids? Dina.
Okay, so I have to say we're somewhat of an anomaly. So
I bet you're a good anomaly, not a bad one. Yeah, that.
This is true, and this is why I'm so immersed in this, not in the field, but in this particular area of the field, because we can make a difference. We can do things differently. I was talking about policy before, but so policies are a lot of times written by people not of color, who know what to prioritize and what to look for. Like Tarek was saying, a lot of it comes back to just the understanding of what this means to be gifted, what it means to have this innate ability that other people are not going to recognize because they're not inside your culture. They don't know your culture. They're not inside your skin. So what are some of the things that we can do? In my district, we have a very high Hispanic population. I'm in mm-hmm. Phoenix, Arizona, you would imagine. And what I've been able to do is kind of change the way that we not only identify but serve. Because there's things that the schools can do in order to ameliorate the issues that are driven by some of the policy and some of the, like what Tarek was saying, the higher education, when we have teachers coming into the field and they're not exposed, they don't know these qualities,
right.
The students,
exactly.
The characteristics, the
exactly.
traits. And so if we look at that purely without identifying it to a certain group of students, then we're more capable of recognizing some of the potential that we see in the students. But secondly, we don't have to identify according to any national standards or even state criteria. We just have to look at our schools and within each building and say, use local norms, use building norms, test everybody, and then say, okay, what is the population, what is the percentage of the population in this school, in this district, that needs some supplemental services? And so we can group students and we can identify and group students according to our own criteria. And that's what schools need to do. They need to make that shift over to, instead of looking at this national percentile or something that you have to have on the test and then making it even more difficult by saying, and you have to have this achievement level and you have to be able to speak English fluently and you need this and this whatever in order to be included in our gifted services. We just need to look for the kids in our schools and our buildings that actually will benefit from more advanced services, not advanced, but advanced academics sometimes.
I get what you mean.
But also just to be able to recognize that these students have this higher potential, group them together, and then teach the teachers how to respond to that, how to be culturally responsive and give them the pedagogy that they need, the support that they need in the schools in order to work with those students. But it really does come back down to a recognition of what it means to be really smart and
get to know your kids. Know your kids.
Look
at them and come up with the definitions that make sense for your area is what you're saying, and that makes perfect sense. The reason I asked the percentage questions, okay, I'm concerned. And Tarek, Dina's out in Paradise Valley, but Tarek, you're the.
Let me chime in on that one.
Oh,
yeah,
please,
so percentages.
Please go.
I want to direct your audience to a report by our colleague, Dr. Marcia Gentry, and her colleagues, and it's called System Failure. And within this report, they use the data from the Office of Civil Rights, which is widely acceptable.
Thank you.
And so
keep going.
For advocates, who are for culturally responsive gifted education, for equity in gifted education, for anti-racist gifted education, for trying to understand where systemic racism may show up, and they need data, this is a report that one can go to understand how their state, the yield for their state. And so this concept of missingness, they define this concept of missingness as students who could or should have been identified, and I'm quoting, throwing the percentages identified in each state on average. Okay, and so there's this idea that, you know, once you find underrepresentation, okay, you know that there's a difference between the enrollment in the gifted program and the enrollment in the school. But how many should have been if we look at that? So they're introducing this concept of missingness. It's a very important concept. And so for advocates who are advocates for anti-racism and trying to confront systemic issues, knowing, getting this data and identifying those percentages will help you to identify also missingness. So to give you an example, they report that for black students are missing at a rate of 63 to 74%. Okay, and so, and Latinx students 53 to 66%.
Wow.
Now, this is not, you know, you have to also contextualize it. So this is these are statewide reports, but this should encourage many of you who are listening to look at the data to see how your school compares with the state, how your school compares with the district, to get an understanding of who's missing, because black students are the group that are missing the most. This is looking at a national sample.
Are we surprised, Eric?
No, we're not surprised, but I think sometimes what's necessary is that
you got to look at it because we need the data. It's the data.
You need data,
exactly. The difference.
You need data, because some people may not see the problem or understand the issues, and some people may be
I would argue with that. I would argue with that. Everybody could see the problem. They just stuck their head in the sand. Okay, and said it wasn't
bystanders.
One.
Right.
Yeah.
That was my second point. That many some people are bystanders. But with the data, when that's presented, you can say, well, no, we're missing some kids. And we have a school of 300. It's a 300 of 300 to 400 elementary school, and there are no kids identified. That's the obvious.
Yeah.
But if the school is predominantly African American, you know, at 86%, and the gifted program is 66% white, and they only represent 3% of the population. Those are issues, and so the missingness part of it is just really important for your audience to really grasp.
Yeah, and everybody just open your eyes. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Just open your eyes. Go ahead, Dina, please.
And I think, but a lot of what Tarek is saying really comes down to teacher education and awareness.
That's what I said. Yeah.
And
that's what I said.
Yeah. And so if we start there, that's a good starting point. Is to start. We're not sitting there like not understanding. We, like you said, there's decades and decades of research.
Yeah.
So we're totally aware of it. But I think that the problem is that the issue is that we haven't got that built into some of our teacher education programs. And as you said, I teach at Arizona State University as well as being with Paradise Valley. And so there's a lot of us in the field, a lot of in NAGC, most of us are like trying to advocate for improving some of that teacher education, some of those preparation courses and coursework in order to make sure that students, teachers that come into the field have some better understanding. But like I said before, I do think that we're starting to see some improvements in that we're looking at things like using building norms, using local norms, using tests and identification criteria that are not biased, remove some of those obstacles that have been preventing these students from entering the programs. And just being aware of that is going to change our field. And that's what we're trying to do, especially with this new equity symposium that Tarek and I are.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in just a second. I just circled it with my pen. I want to ask one thing, though, before we talk about that. Okay. Tarek, I'm going to talk to you about this one. Okay. We can talk about the Atlanta public schools, which I would bet is mostly African-American, like my old school district, Philadelphia. Okay. The percent, I don't know what the percentage is of gifted kids. okay? But let's say it's exactly where it should be, okay? I want to talk, and both of you can talk about this. There's such a thing as under-resourced schools, okay? We may be able to pick out the gifted kids. We may say, yeah, this kid belongs in our, quote, gifted program. But the question is, what's the quality of the gifted program if they're under-resourced schools? Tarek, there you go. You want another doctorate? Answer that one.
That
and I'll give Dean a doctorate when we're all said and done, if she wants one. Okay.
Actually, I have one, too.
Dr. Brules, thank you. Would you like Dr. Squared? You're going to have that from the University of Larry by the time we're done here, okay, with your oral thesis here. But under-resourced, talk about that. There's got to be a difference there between the best and the school.
You can't wait until there's resources in the schools. Right now, actually, we have more resources than ever because of COVID. But it's what you do with your existing resources, how you allocate those in the schools. It's not a matter of, oh, we'll do this when we have more money. We are obligated to teach all of our students, regardless of their backgrounds and their cultures and their experiences.
Exactly, but there's
going
to be a difference between the richest school district, okay, in the suburbs and the gifted kids in the urban schools, if I may, that are less resourced. That's my point.
Once again, it doesn't take money. It takes how you identify, how you group, how you teach the teachers. Those are things that we need to do anyway for all of our students. Mm-hmm. If we look at these students and say they deserve everything that all the others, then it doesn't mean we need additional funds. It means that we need to change our mindset and how we approach these kids. Another side there is some of the richer districts identify fewer kids because they don't because of all the politics, you know, that are involved.
Because they're all gifted.
And being in the gifted program. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, every kid is gifted. We'll just do the whole thing. By the way, Dina, I don't know about Tarek. You're going to heaven. Okay, I just want you to know that you are really a good person. We'll work on Tarek in the next few minutes. Okay, Tarek, before we go into the symposium, just do you have any comment on under-resourced gifted programs?
I agree with Dina that we can't wait and we can't make excuses either. I think that under-resourced, and this is not to come down on the educators who work in under-resourced schools. I worked in one.
No,
of
it's not the educators. It's the resources we're talking about.
It's the resources. And so I think that there needs to be partnerships with communities in ways that, especially around the advanced programming, where there is an expectation that the students are served and served adequately, robustly, rigorously, creatively, in ways that allow for the students' potential to be magnified. And so I've partnered with a local school. This was one of the schools that was underperforming. They had very few, gifted students. And these, you know, once there's an investment made, and we didn't have a major grant, we didn't have additional resources. What we had was a will. There was a will. And with the will and the partnership and the training and the trust that was built, I mean, because they're relations. So, you know, when you're that school and you have outsiders coming in and trying to partner, these are some of the things that are really important. But let me just say that we worked to increase programming and used approaches that were responsive to the community and creative approaches, critical thinking approaches, and community problem solving and future problem solving was a pathway that satisfied and addressed those needs, but also with acceleration. I want to emphasize this part too, because in lower resource schools, acceleration approaches can be one of those inexpensive, non-additional personnel kinds of approaches to allow students to gain access to advanced, more rigorous experiences that will meet their needs. And that's something that can be done next week. And it's really, Dr. Brulius talked about grouping. Students can be grouped differently and accelerated kinds of experiences with other teachers. And that's just a scheduling modification. So I just offer that
scheduling
idea.
Scheduling inequity is a big deal. scheduling inequity is. It really is. And an overlooked one, I might add. We're going
to
run out of time.
Cost.
I want to make sure something.
Too.
Yes. Go ahead. What did you say?
Derek. And that's why I was.
And by the way, Dina, you were right. Tarek just agreed with you. But go ahead. We got about 4 minutes left. I want to talk about the symposium, but you go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just going to say it doesn't cost anything how you schedule students into classes and how you train teachers.
That's
we
right.
We have to do that anyway. It doesn't cost anything more.
You're right. And now we just got a few minutes left. There's a symposium coming up on African-American and Hispanic Latino students, okay, supporting equity for those groups from NAGC, National Association for Gifted Children.org. You guys are running it, Dina and Tarek? Did I just hear that, Dina? Are you running it?
We are on the board, and we're two of the four that are running it. We're also joined by our colleagues, Dr. Jaime Castellano and Donna Ford, who have done tremendous amounts of research in this area.
When is it?
Oh, it's coming up in just a few weeks. It's August 10th, 11th, and 12th.
I'm going to say it clearly, August 10th through the 12th. Go to NAGC.org. I'm assuming this. I may be wrong. Is it virtual?
Yes.
It is virtual. But we're having our face-to-face convention in November, but this leading up to this, and we're going to have experts from around the country in different areas talking about some of these same topics that we were talking, that Tarek and I were just talking about today.
And when is where is the national conference?
That's going to be in November, and that's going to be in Colorado.
Okay. Probably Denver or Colorado Springs or wherever.
Actually, so that's why I hesitated, because it's at the Gaylord Resort, which is outside of Denver, near the airport. But it's going to be a tremendous experience, and we're going to have a virtual component as well for those that can't travel for whatever reason. And so, like last year, our convention, we made it, anybody who registered, we have it they have access to the sessions for 6 months later, and so some of the folks that are not going to be able to travel will be able to have that accessibility.
So
but we're going to have, so we're going to
so
have,
important.
NAGC highlights, you know, the gifted services for underrepresented populations, special populations, brown and black students, and every other group that is underrepresented in our populations. But we have tremendous support for that. One of the things that I've been involved in is the Javits Fraser Scholars Program, and that's where we invite teachers from Title I districts to come in who are going to make an influence, who can influence their own school districts, and we pay for them, and it's a scholarship program.
Wow.
But then we support them afterwards. So this has been ingrained in NAGC for a very long time, but we have accelerated our efforts in this area for that champion equity statement that we came up with, that Tarek was just talking about, because now's the time. It's right.
Okay, I want you
momentum,
too. I want both of you and everybody listening to go over to our website, join with us on our consortium. Okay, Jonathan Plucker has a big article in our NAGC, has a big article, et cetera, in our issue this month that we just put up on site over at ace-ed.org. We are all about equity, and we're all about access to learning for everybody, okay? And you two are prime examples, Tarek, Dina, of what we're trying to do. I invite you, of course, to write anything you want for our magazine and website. We love you guys, and the fact that you two plus the others are running the NAGC the Equity Consortium, I call it that, on August 10th through the 12th, okay, coming up. Please, everybody, go over there, check it out. And also in November, the big conference in magnificent Colorado. We got to go. I'm sorry to be so abrupt at the end here. Tarek, thanks a million. Dina, thanks a million.
Thank you.
I love having you both on. Okay? And just keep up the good work. Okay? I promise.
Thank you so much.
Okay?
Thank
It'll
you for
pay
your
off in the end.
To our field.
Okay?
Yes.
Thank you both.
Agreed.
Bye, guys. Take care. Be safe. Bye-bye. Okay, Tarek Grantham, great. Okay, Dana Brewer's even better. She's from Arizona. He's Atlanta. Excuse me, University of Georgia. All right, it's great stuff. He's a professor of educational psychology. She runs the gifted program at Arizona State and the Paradise Valley Unified School District. They're great. NAGC.org, ace-ed.org is where we'll archive this. Everybody, I got to go. Thanks for listening.